Hello, and welcome to Off Curve. I'm Wicked Good, and I'm talking to you about Hearthstone as I am driving home from work. And it is Thursday, May 3rd, 2018, as I'm recording this. I'm going to talk about my ladder results in a minute, because that's basically what the rest of this episode is. Hold tight. I know I usually start that way, but this is not most weeks. And I just want to kind of start off the episode with this, and because I honestly debated whether I was even recording this week or not, as a lot of people in the community are this week, because a lot of us lost a friend on Monday, well, really Sunday, but Monday we found out about it. In case you haven't heard, or you weren't following Twitter the last couple days, Toast the Badger was a longtime member of the Hearthstone community, as well as she was playing in the UHL this season, and she passed away on Sunday. We don't need to talk about the specifics. If you go Google, you will find it. Suffice it to say that it was unexpected for most of us. And you know, I first got to know of Toast back when I was doing, I believe, Isometric at the time, when we covered the Terrence M, racism in Twitch chat debacle a couple of years ago at DreamHack. I think it was DreamHack Austin. And, you know, she was kind of at the center of that at the time, and I was lucky enough to get to know her as a person rather than just as a name in a news story. And like one of the things that I learned over, you know, the course of several years of doing Isometric and Disruption is that, you know, a lot of the times when you're at the center of, when you're a marginalized community member and you're at the center of some sort of a crap storm, for lack of a better term, that's really all that anybody ever wants to talk to you about, and they don't necessarily care about why you were involved in gaming or in the game to begin with. And I was lucky enough to get to know Toast a little bit, through messages on Twitter and getting to cast her in the first UHL game this season, and I was actually prepping to cast her again on Monday when we got the word. It's heartbreaking, really, because, I mean, she really, if you look at Twitter, you see how many people that she touched. She was responsible for the Badass Women of Hearthstone, hashtag, which really brought a lot of the community together. I mean, every time that I, you know, popped into her stream or got to talk to her after a match or any interaction with her, she was just so wonderful and funny and kind, and she would go out of her way to help people, even though she was suffering herself to a large degree. And, you know, I'm, like I said on Twitter at the time, like, I'm glad I got to know her for the little bit that I did. And it's sad because, you know, she was a wonderful person, and we're all a little bit sadder having lost her. I really can't do justice to, like, the effect that Toast had on the community, as well as, like, the latest episode of Tier 5. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. I'll warn you, it can be a tough listen, but it's also important, and, you know, Rod and Adam did a really good job of paying respects to Toast in a way that I think that we all would like to, and you know, and that's kind of why I struggled with whether I was going to record this week or not, because part of it was that I came down with a stomach bug Tuesday night, full disclosure, but, you know, part of it was also, like, do I really want to do an episode talking about the deck I got to Legend right after this happened? And I thought about it, and I would think that she would not want everything to stop on her behalf. As much as she liked to help other people, I feel like she would want us to keep going on, and you know, there's a lot of people who take comfort in gaming and in this game in particular, and I don't think that she'd want that to stop. So in that spirit, I'm going to keep doing the show that I expected to do, when, before this news came down. But I did want to not, you know, and I'm kind of struggling for words too, a little bit too. I didn't want to not, you know, acknowledge and pay respects to Toast and the impact that she had on all of us, either directly or indirectly. So, there is a charity for, I believe, Chronic Pain in Canada that, that her family has asked donations to go to. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. But I think that, you know, the one thing that I do want to say before I go on to the rest of the show as planned is, you know, something that I say, and you know, I know not everyone sticks around for the contact info because it's the same stuff every week, right? But, the one thing that I do say at the end of every show is, you know, take the time to say thank you or to just tell somebody that you appreciate them if you do, because, you know, you never really know how much time you're going to have to do that. And I mean, I say that in the context of podcast reviews, but it really, like, if there's somebody who's doing work that you appreciate, or they're a nice person, or, you know, they're doing something that seems unappreciated, just tell them that you notice and say thank you, or just tell them that they're great, you know, because, like, from what happened, like, I don't think that would have changed anything with Toast's situation, but I do know that, you know, she suffered a lot, and those types of things at least made one of those days a little bit easier, to get through and brightened up her day a little bit. She said as much, you know, so, you know, it's just something that I need to do better at, and I just want to kind of say it out loud that, you know, nobody is ever upset to hear that they're great or that they're doing something that you appreciate, and most people don't hear it enough. And so if that's something that you think they know, just tell them, because honestly, I can tell you from, even from doing this show, and this is not fishing for compliments, I assure you, like, I you know, don't take it that way, but, you know, I can tell you, having created content for a long time and just kind of existing as a human, not everyone knows or hears that they're appreciated, or that they're great, or that they're doing things that help other people, right? So if that's something you're thinking about and you feel like they know, don't assume they know, and tell them, and you know, it's just, it'll brighten somebody's day, and it's not even, yeah, anyway. I should really get on to actual Hearthstone content before I just start stammering randomly. But you know, I think I said what I wanted to say here. So let's get on to, you know, business as usual as much as we can. All right, so anyway, so I promised you a ladder results. And I when I left off last week, I was pretty down in the dumps about my performance on ladder. And was kind of getting to the point of the month where I was accepting that I was not going to make it to Legend. And, turned out I did. And I was not expecting to, and it was with a deck that I super was not expecting to. But I think that it's good, and the meta may have shifted enough that it may not be great right now, but I think it's a deck that you probably want to be aware of, at least, because I feel like it's going to come in and out of the meta, and it's going to be worth knowing, and that is Taunt Druid. So, I believe we talked about this at the beginning of the expansion with Hat. This is one of the new decks that came out of the new set. And I'll talk about that more in detail, but the general gist of it is that you're summoning a bunch of taunts, and then you have Hadronox and Naturalize to bring them all back, and then you have Witching Hour, which summons a beast. The only beast in your deck is Hadronox, so that comes back, and then you Carnivorous Cube it, and then you have lots of taunts, and then you just play taunts for days, and then eventually just overwhelm your opponent. So, Zalay posted a really great video, and I will put a link to the show notes, and I would absolutely recommend that you watch it, because he explains in great detail. I'm going to talk about the deck after I do a little bit of Legend story time, because that's the thing that we do. But he does a really good job of explaining why, the way that you play the deck in every matchup, and I'm going to cover it a little bit, but not to the level that he does, and also why he made some of the specific card choices that he did. And it's about a 20-minute video. It's really in-depth. It's really worth watching. And it changed the way that I played that deck. Zoli's really good about explaining, you know, explaining concepts in general. But what happened was that I was at, like, rank 4, 1-star, and I was just getting frustrated. And I decided I wasn't going to play that deck because Quest Rogue was a thing. And then I just decided, you know what, screw it. Because Quest Rogue at most is going to be, what, 20% of the games? And I've been trying to play the Mind Blast Priests, and I've been losing to Taunt Druids. Because they just armor up forever. And they don't let you get your win condition out. And I decided, you know what, I'm just going to try this. And because I was kind of in a YOLO state of mind at that point. Like, I figured I'd lost my chance of getting the legend at that point. Like, I knew realistically that wasn't the case, but it was like 2 days before the end of the season, and I was up back at rank 4, and it was not likely to happen. Well, I played the first day, and I went something like 12-4, like something ridiculous like that. And I got myself up to, I want to say I went from rank 4 1 stars to like rank 2 3 stars in the course of an evening. Like, I just came home, and it was like Friday night. And I just was done for the week and just ground a whole bunch of Hearthstone, and I got all the way up. And I kind of bounced around a little bit on Saturday. Saturday was a little bit busy with stuff going on for the kids and whatever. But I was able to at least get myself up to rank 1. And Saturday night, I was grinding a bunch of games, and I got myself up to like rank 1.3 when I just ran into like 3 Quest Rogues in a row. And then I decided, okay, I'm going to switch to Tempo Mage now, because if this is just all Quest Rogues at low legend, then that's what I'm going to do. And I got up to a final boss and then fell back down to 1.3. And this was like 12:30 at night by the time that I finally shut it down. And I was like, kind of like, I wanted to keep momentum, but I didn't want to, once I'd fallen back down, I'm like, okay, you know what? I need to close it down for the night, because I'm not going to be playing my best Hearthstone at 12:30 in the morning when I knew I had to get up at 6:30 the following day. Because, you know, Hebrew school's a thing, and we have to wake up at, like, 6:30 in the morning to take the kids to Hebrew school. Don't get me started. You know, we did all the morning stuff. I came back, and I just decided, okay, I'm gonna do this. And I won one and lost one, and then I came up against a Quest Rogue at rank 1, 3 stars. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Let's do this. I'd beaten some Quest Rogues with the deck before that, and I just decided, you know what, I'm just gonna play it out. Like, let's just see what happens, right? So they got the quest done on turn 7, and, like, to be honest, like, a lot of it's a blur, but I ended up by fatiguing them out on turn 17. So what happened was that they got their quest out, but I was able to ramp up enough to get my first Hadronox down. And, like, you can deal with a lot of the Taunt Druids, taunts with Vanishes, but they had to use their Vanishes on the early side. And so I was able to kind of get them to burn the Vanishes and the Saps and just get enough Hadronoxes down that they weren't ever able to get through. And then I started thinking, like, after a few turns of this, like, I know this is Quest Rogue, but they got to be running out of stuff soon. And eventually they did. And I felt like that was a bigger game for me than getting to Legend, to be honest with you. Just because, like, it's such an unfavorite matchup. Like, I'd won other Quest Rogue games before. Like, there were a couple times that usually they involved me building a board and then just getting a branching path down really quick and being able to burst them down with, like, Pseudo Savage Roar. But not usually, like, grinding them out after they get the quest done relatively early. So that felt really good. And then I faced 2 Odd Warriors in a row. And beat them both, but they were both, again, grindy games. And then finally I got up to my second final boss, which was this bizarre, like, elemental control mage. So I don't know exactly what it was running, but I know that I saw way more, like, Blaze Callers than I expected to see, but it was also running things like Polymorph. And Polymorph is really bad for the Taunt Druid, because you end up not being able to resurrect your Hadronox because you just bring back a sheep. But I think I was able to get 1 Hadronox out of it. They got me down to 2 life with a Baron Geddon on board that they'd had for like several turns that I wasn't able to clear. And I was somehow able to use some combination of like branching paths and spellstone or something to clear the Baron Geddon and stabilize enough that they just gave up and conceded. And I was like, I didn't even know what to do with that. Because as soon as I saw a big spell mage, I'm like, okay, I lost. I'm done. But I was able to kind of make it through that enough and make them expend enough of their resources that they gave up the ghost. And yeah, so I was really happy about that. It was, like, I wasn't expecting to get to Legend this month. Again, it had been a really rocky month. And you know, I got to the point where, and I talked about this last week, where I was really starting to wonder what was going on with me. And come to find out, so I posted that tweet, you know, just kind of saying that, like, I'm really struggling and whatever. And it turned out that Freshka, who's a former pro player, but he's still active in the Hearthstone community. Well, he would tell you otherwise, but he is. Offered to look at some of my replays. And it was really, like, I really want to give him a big shout out because, you know, the specific advice wasn't even related to this deck because I had switched decks by then because it took him a couple days to get around to it. By the way, he got married on Monday, over the weekend. I'm not sure if it was on Monday or I think it was on Saturday that he got married. So he's, like, prepping for his wedding and looking at my replays. And honestly, like, again, in the spirit of what I just talked about, like, I really, really appreciate that. Because, I mean, that's like, you have better things to do than look at my replays and try to explain to me why I'm losing. And, you know, in the middle of planning the biggest day of your life. And he still took that time out to help me out and, you know, point out some things. And even, like, the specific advice wasn't as much important as him, like, looking at what they mulliganed and saying, well, they two kept, so they kept these cards. So why are you doing this? Because you know that if they kept two cards, they're keeping that. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? I've been lazy about watching what my opponent's doing. Just flat out. Like, I've been not playing the game mindfully enough. And that was really kind of what turned me around. Like, I talked about this on a previous episode a while ago. And I have these moments where I just kind of go into autopilot. And I don't think as much about what my opponent's going to be playing. I'm just playing my own game. And that's fine for, like, the first week of the expansion when everything's ridiculous and you don't know what's going on. I really didn't have any excuse by the last week of the month to be doing that. But I was still in that mode anyway. So Freshka's advice, even more so than, like, the individual plays where that was helpful, was just, like, a reminder that, hey, there's an actual meta now and you need to be paying attention to what's going on and playing around things more than you are. And so after that, I switched Hearthstone to full screen, which is another thing that I wasn't doing. And I made sure to pay attention, even if it didn't make that much of a difference a lot of the time, like paying attention to what they were mulliganing and, you know, paying attention to what they were playing to think about what I was playing around a little bit better. And that helped. It helped a lot, actually. Just playing, it's amazing how much of a difference playing the game mindfully makes. And I should know this. And I forget it sometimes because I fall into bad habits just like everybody else. So, I, you know, he's probably not going to accept that, but I'm going to say that, you know, thank you to Freshka for helping me recenter myself because it really did make a big difference in changing my mindset and changing my approach to how I was playing. And, I mean, the deck helped too. Like, the deck at the time of the meta was straight fire, but I think that me playing mindfully, I would not have gotten through those last few matchups, which are generally unfavored for me. I don't know about the odd warrior, but the quest rogue and the big spell mage are both very unfavored. And for me to pull those games out required me to be playing mindfully and be playing, you know, at my best, which is frankly what I was not doing for most of the month. So I guess that's, if you want some general advice, I would say that, you know, being more mindful about your gameplay is something that we can all get better at usually. And if you're struggling and you don't know why, that's kind of something that you can start with. That's just one thing that maybe it'll help improve your win percentage a little bit. All right, so let's talk about the deck a little bit because again, I learned some things and I want to talk about the deck a little bit and kind of how you approach playing with it. I don't know that it's going to be good all the time. In general, it was very bad against Quest Rogue, very bad against, it's not great against Paladin, unfortunately, and it's terrible against Tempo Mage. But in a meta that has a lot of Warlock and a lot of other slower decks, like what else was like Control Priest, which is becoming a deck that's prevalent in the meta. Like, if you're seeing a lot of Control Priest, this is basically the antidote to that. control priest and any sort of warlock, war control warlock. But even against, like, rogues, I had a positive win rate. And even against the mages, I wasn't terrible. It just wasn't great. And, you know, tempo mage can sometimes just get you if they get the weapon down, especially because you have no weapon removal. But let's just kind of go through the list. It runs two lesser jester spellstones, which are just cheap removal. You know, because you kind of need that, and you have enough armor gain in the deck that the spellstones will get powered up more often than not. You have two naturalizes, which really you don't want to use for removal if you can help it. They're typically used to get rid of a Hadronox, because you can play Hadronox and then naturalize for 10 mana, and that plays the Hadronox and then immediately removes it before your opponent can silence it or polymorph it or whatever. But you can use it on against like something like a... It's kind of a matter of knowing your matchups, right? Like, if you're playing a longer game, you want to save that for Hadronox. If you're playing against Spiteful Druid or whatever, sometimes you just need that to get rid of a Deathwing, and that's fine. Excuse me. Wild Growth is there for ramp, because ramp is definitely a thing you need with a deck with this much top end. The list that Zalae runs has Double Wrath, which I really like, again, because you need early removal against some of the faster decks, and against the slower decks, you can use it to cycle, and in your general game plan with this list is kind of like Freeze Mage or Quest Mage, where you're trying to stay alive long enough to get your combo down. So being able to have a card that's both removal and draw is really powerful. Tar Creeper is one of the taunts. It comes out from Oaken Summons. It's just kind of a good wall, especially early, against some of the board-centric decks. Witching Hour is a key part of the combo. That's and these are all two ofs, and pretty much unless I say otherwise, or they're legendaries. Witching Hour will bring you back Hadronox, and that's really the only thing that exists. It sucks to top deck it early, but you know, having it in hand when you drop Hadronox is really good. Branching Paths is one of the MVPs of the deck. It draws for you, and it gains you armor, and it also can provide you burst damage if you have a board. So, one of the things with Branching Paths is, like, more often than not, against a slower deck, you're using it to draw. Against a faster deck, you're using it to heal. But it is important to keep in mind, like, what your board state looks like and what your opponent's health looks like, because sometimes that's just a Savage Roar, and that's enough damage to just get lethal out of nowhere. So if they leave a board up, sometimes you can use Branching Paths to push through lethal damage. Ironwood Golem's in the deck for the same reason the Tar Creeper is. It's just another taunt that comes out of Oaken Summons. Again, Oaken Summons is also in the deck. That's 6 armor gain, plus it pulls a taunt out of your deck. So generally, you want your Oaken Summonses early. You're generally mulliganing for ramp and Oaken Summons, and sometimes Wrath against aggro, just because... What Oaken Summons does for you is it both gives you armor and it puts a taunt out on the board, and it gets that taunt out of your deck so you're not top decking it. So generally, if you have the choice between drawing and playing Oaken Summons, you typically want to play Oaken Summons first, because that's going to improve the quality of the draws that you're getting. Because it kind of does suck when you draw an Ironwood Golem or a Char Creeper. It's not the worst thing in the world, but it is... it's not what you want, obviously. You'd rather get the Ironwood Golem out of the Oaken Summons. 2 Swipes, because again, you need board control. 2 Carnivorous Cubes, because you want to be able to kill off the second and third Hadronoxes. But, it should be noted that you can drop the Carnivorous Cube just as a 4-6, and it's fine. Against an aggro deck, if you just need board presence, a 4-6 for 5 mana is fine. And sometimes you can use it a little bit creatively. Like, you can take one of your bigger taunts, like a Primordial Drake or a Lich King, and especially if you can kill it off with a Naturalize, you can actually get 2 of those, and you can end the game earlier. So, don't be afraid. You need to know what your matchup is. In like a slow control matchup, I would never do that, because I'd rather save it for the Hadronoxes. But if you're playing against a faster deck, and you just kind of need 2 walls in the way so that you can't die to a silence, like, Carnivorous Cube on, like, a Primordial Drake, or even an Iron Golem isn't the worst thing in the world. So, don't get tunnel vision on the Carnivorous Cube saying that's like a combo piece, I can't use it. A lot of combo decks, playing combo decks correctly, is being able to recognize when you need to use your combo pieces outside the combo. You have 2 Nourishes that you're typically using for mana crystals early, and then you're using for draw late. But even if you don't have anything in your hand right now to nourish for, generally still it's a good idea to Nourish for Crystals, because you have so many cards that are either going to draw you more cards and then allow you to play cards behind them, or that are just really, really expensive that you need to be able to get out of your hand as quickly as possible. You have two Primordial Drakes, because those are two of the best taunts in the game, and they're really good against Paladin. You have the Lich King, because he's a big taunt that also is one of the best taunts in the game. You have one Dragon Hatcher, because it pulls another, for the same reason that you run Oaken Summons, it pulls one or two, eventually if it sticks, of your Primordial Drakes out of the deck and improves your future draws. And also, it's a two-attack minion, which means that it will come out of Master Oakheart, which is another card that's in the list, that is there to pull Hadronox primarily. It gives you another way to get Hadronox if Hadronox is at the bottom of your deck. You do need to be careful, and you don't always have the luxury, to make sure that both of your Ironwood Golems have been played before you play Master Oakheart, because the Ironwood Golems also have three attack. Sometimes you just kind of have to take the 50-50 and hope for the best if you really need Hadronox right now. I thought that the Ironwood Golems were bad because of that, but it turns out they're okay. You just need to be careful about what you've played and what you haven't, and just know what you're expecting. And sometimes you'll play Master Oakheart after you've drawn Hadronox to just get taunts out before you drop Hadronox, which is fine too, because typically it will pull a Tar Creeper, a Dragon Hatcher, and either an Ironwood Golem or Hadronox, which is fine. And then, especially if the Dragon Hatcher pulls a Primordial Drake, that's like five bodies for one card, which is pretty good. And then obviously you have Hadronox, because that's the reason for the season. Like, that's what drives the whole deck. You're resurrecting taunts forever. I found that this was, it was a really good deck against decks that were trying to just burn you out as their primary game plan, Control Priest being the biggest one, but Tempo Mage, you could survive as long as they didn't get the weapon. If they got the weapon, you're pretty lost. Just because you can't really run any weapon removal. Like, maybe you could find room for a Harrison in here. Maybe if you wanted to drop the Dragon Hatcher, I don't know that I'd recommend it. All the rest of the... I guess there's that 5-5 ooze. But, I mean, I don't know why you would play that if you could play Harrison. The rest of the weapon removal and all of the silences cost less than 4, and you really don't want to pull those out with Oaken Summons. So those are not in the deck. So you're kind of a little bit vulnerable to those. So sometimes Spiteful Druid's a problem, just because, like, if they come out with Tyrantus on 6, there's not much you can do. But it's... And Paladin, you know, has so many boards that sometimes it can be hard to hold them off. Especially even Paladin, because they run Equality. But I found that, well, against Warlock, this was really good, just because you can... They get to Nuzoth, as my friend Ridiculous Hat would say, they get to Nuzoth once, and you get to Nuzoth, like, 5 times. And it's really good against Control Priest, because you can just armor up out of range of their burn. Like, they can Alex you for 15 and hurt your life total, but they can't do anything about your armor. So unless they really get like a ton of Mind Blasts early, there's not a whole lot that they can do to actually finish the game against you, unless it goes really, really long. And you know, like I said, I probably had like a 50% win rate against Rogue. I mean, it's good against all the aggro decks that aren't like even Paladin, because you can just wall them out. Like, if they're just repeatedly running into walls, there's not a whole lot that they can do there. And even against Tempo Mage, sometimes you can just get there, right? Like, you can just get enough of your healing and enough of your taunts in the way early that they can't get through it. And you can generally burn their explosive runes with, like, an Ironwood Golem or something. But if they get all their secrets out and they can disrupt your ramp, sometimes that's a problem. But I found that, like, I had about a 60% win rate over... Oh, I forget how many games it was. Actually, I probably could look that up, because I think it's in the same tweet. Yeah. So it's in the same tweet, so I can actually look it up. So I had a 61% win rate over 65 games, give or take. And I had a winning record against everything except Paladin. So I actually went 6-5 against Rogue and Mage, which is good given how bad those... matchups are. I was 8-5 against Druid, 6-3 against Warlock, 4-0 against Warrior, and 5-0 against Hunter. So I would say if you're getting frustrated and you're seeing the right mix of decks in the meta, I would absolutely give this a try. I think that it's a pretty strong deck in the right circumstances. Those circumstances being one where neither Tempo Mage nor Quest Rogue is really prevalent, and there's, especially if you're seeing a lot of Warlock. I think that this could be a really great tool for you in your arsenal. I don't know that I would go and craft stuff for this. Like, if you don't have Hadronox and, you know, you don't have Master Oakheart, I don't know that I'd go crafting stuff for it. Just because it's good and it worked for me. I subsequently went 7-3 in the Brawl of Seam with the same deck, and it worked well. But, you know, it just has enough decks that it loses to that it can be frustrating, and it also is very draw-dependent. I mean, it's a combo deck, right? So, you know, sometimes you just don't get what you need. Sometimes you just draw Witching Hours, and that's it. So, as far as Mulligans are concerned, Lay's video lays it out, but generally you're looking for ramp, and you're looking for Wrath against aggro, and you're actually keeping the Lich King against known control, and there aren't that many classes that are known control other than, like, Priest, Warrior, and Warlock, maybe. But the reason you do that is because when you can resurrect multiple Lich Kings, especially when you can get two out at once sometimes with the subsequent Hatredoxes, that's really, really powerful. So keeping Lich King, especially because you get enough ramp, like, you generally will just get your ramp, and you'll get to drop an 8-drop pretty early anyway, and that's just powerful on its own, and then, you know, fueling the future Hatredoxes is powerful too. So I'd say, again, go watch Zalay's video if you're interested in this deck. I think it's worth trying, and maybe you can be successful with it. I certainly was. All right, so that's really all I have to talk about this week. I have a couple of topics lined up for the next couple of weeks, so I'm not sure, you know, what the next couple of weeks are going to bring, but I've got some things lined up that I want to talk about, so we'll address those when they come. But I did want to, you know, kind of get my opportunity to do my legend story time, because, you know, that's why I do this, so that I can tell you about my trials and tribulations. But at least it was less harrowing than last month, I guess you could say. There were fewer Kingsbane rogues involved, but there were still rogues. So anyway, you can, as always, you can find all the links to this, to what I talk about in the show, at offcurve.com. You also can follow the show's account for updates and for new episodes. That's at offcurve on Twitter. I also posted, I did a thing at the beginning of this month, just posting a lot of the high legend decks and the first day legend decks, from the beginning of the month to that site, just as a reference for myself. I figured that might be useful. If that's something you like, let me know. I might do more of that. You can also follow me on Twitter. I'm at WickedGood, for all of your ridiculous screenshot needs. And you can also follow me on Twitch. I'm WickedGoodFM. I hopefully will get back to streaming on Sunday evenings, hopefully, because now that we're not doing UHL matches on Sundays, you can find me throughout the rest of the week. Not this week, because we're off for obvious reasons, taking the week off this week. But in general, you can find me casting matches at UnitedHearthstoneLeague.com. Also, please do, you know, leave a review on iTunes if you can. We did get one review from Bano Bean, who said that this is worth your time. He talks about the meta and his thought process on different Hearthstone problem solving. So that was a really nice review to get. And again, those reviews, I'm at 35 right now. I'd really love to get to 50 reviews before I hit 50 episodes, which is actually coming up soon. So if you haven't, and, you know, if you can take 2 minutes, I'd appreciate it. If not, that's fine too. But, you know, again, you know, if you can tell somebody about the show, if you're enjoying it, that always helps out too. And, you know, just be nice to each other, right? Like, if somebody's doing something you like, just tell them, and tell them that you're enjoying it, and tell them that it's helping you. Because I'll tell you, as a creator, like, that never gets old, and it helps just kind of give you the mental fuel that you need to pick up on the mic every week, even on weeks like this where it's a little bit harder. So anyway, as always, I really do appreciate you, you know, taking your limited podcasting time and spending it with me on my drive home. I can't tell you how much it means to me that, you know, there are as many of you as there are that are willing to listen to me babble about this game on a stream of consciousness for, like, half hour to 45 minutes every week. And I appreciate you taking the time, and I hope that this helps at least a little bit. So good luck on the ladder and in the Brawl Seam, actually, if that's something that you're doing this week, and in everything that you're doing. And I will talk to you next week. Have a good one.